Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, we have a little treat for you now, because we're going to continue our summer series exploring Ireland's cities and towns through their history. Last week, we were in Galway City, and this evening, it's the turn of one of the nicest cities in Ireland, in my opinion, the Treaty City, Limerick, to reveal the secrets of its colourful past. I'm joined by walking tour guide and local historian Brian Colopy. Brian, you're very welcome to Drive Time.
Well, how's it going?
Take us back to the very beginning, if you don't mind, the founding of Limerick City.
Yeah, so I mean, Limerick as an urban centre, I mean, obviously the people have lived here probably thousands of years, but the city itself, its earliest date we can give you is about 630 AD, which is St. Munchen. So St. Munchen made some form of early religious settlement on what's the King's Island today, which would have been called Inishibten back then. Now, there isn't a whole lot of physical remains left from St. Munchen. And the most famous part we have of Munchen is his curse that he gave, that strangers will flourish and natives which will perish, which was based on the idea that when Munchen was actually building his church here, the native people of Limerick refused to help him, but those from across the river in Thomond, which was considered part of County Clare at the time,
yeah,
did indeed help him.
And give us the curse again.
It's that strangers will flourish and natives will perish. Sorry, I'm kind of summarising it quite succinctly there. There's a much more flowery version of
It's a good one. And you said the island, that Limerick is an island, like Ile de Paris, Paris as well. It is at the heart of it, is it?
I mean, it's funny now because we'll say if you arrive in Limerick today, where you're generally around, if you're in O'Connell Street, William Street, the main thoroughfares, it's actually Newtown Perry, which is, you're talking 1700s, really, that whole park was designed. But that feels like the modern centre of Limerick. But the historical heart of Limerick is an island, is what we call the island or the island field.
Okay.
And that is historically where the Vikings were, the Normans were. And as I say, right up to the Siege of Limerick in 1691, this is where Limerick is, and it's surrounded by the Shannon River on one side, okay, the Abbey on the other.
So you've given us the founding of Limerick and the curse and St. Munchen. Fast forward now to the arrival of the Vikings and the Normans.
Grand job. So, I mean, the Vikings, they're first recorded, I believe, in 795 AD in the annals of Ulster. So certainly by the early 9th century, the early 800s, you have Vikings coming into Limerick. Now, when they build their first settlement in Limerick, we're not sure. Some people estimate as early as about 830 AD. But certainly by 922, there's a permanent settlement in Limerick. And you'll see it like in at Lunkard Street, for instance, which is off Longford, which would be the ford of the harbour of the boats, which is obviously an indication of that Viking settlement. And then also you have Lax Weir, which is up at, it's near St. Thomas's Island on the river, which comes from the Middle Norse Lax Weir, which is a salmon weir as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the Vikings can have control of the city right up to about 967. And then there's a major battle in where Limerick Junction is today. It's called Sulcode at the time. So it's a battle between Ivar, who's the Viking king of Limerick, and a guy called Mac de Mon, who's actually Brian Boru's brother. And Mac de Mon and Brian Boru are victorious on this day. And after that battle, they come back to Limerick and they essentially raise it to the ground and burn it and destroy the place.
Oh, good God. And then let's talk about the Normans, because at the time of the arrival of the Normans, one of the O'Briens, Donal Mór O'Brien, which sounds like a little bit of Micheál Ó Muirchertaí commentary, doesn't it? He was the ruler of Limerick.
Indeed, yeah. He was. So the O'Briens, essentially, who are the Dalcassians, essentially after that battle in 1967, are in charge of the area that is Limerick. And that goes on right on up to the arrival of the Normans. And there's a Norman called Raymond Le Gros who briefly takes the city. But Donal Mór soon takes it back. And he's an ongoing team with the O'Briens, really. He decides to actually, he says he'll burn the city to the ground rather than allow it become a nest for foreigners. And right up until Donal Moore's death, Limerick remains a Gaelic stronghold, and then he dies in 1194, and the Normans soon after take over, and within 3 years, King John has given a charter to the city, which is actually 10 years before London even gets its charter. And then for the next 400 years, Limerick is essentially a loyal English colony.
Okay, an English city, and preceded by a big battle between Donal Mór and Raymond Mór. And then talk to me about the Siege of Limerick. Everybody's heard about the Siege of Limerick, Brian, haven't they? But to explain to people briefly, if you don't mind, because I want to talk about the pogrom as well. But tell us about the siege.
Of course, yeah. Well, the siege is basically, I mean, we're, everyone in the country is familiar with the Battle of the Boyne, of course. And the siege is essentially a follow-on from that, because even though many people kind of see the Battle of the Boyne as being this decisive victory, you still had 25,000 odd Jacobite troops, Catholic essentially troops, scattered around the country. So in 1690, they pulled back behind the walls of Limerick. Now, the French who were part of that were absolutely horrified at the state of the Limerick walls. They said that a bunch of roasted apples could knock them down. But because of the work of Patrick Sarsfield and a guy called Galloping Hogan, they managed to destroy a large consignment of weapons that the Williamites were planning on using. So the siege in 1690 was unsuccessful. However, the following year, in 1691, they returned after the winter. That siege was successful, and that culminated in the treaty, which was the 3rd of October. And at the end of that, you had the flight of the wild geese, where over 10,000 Irish soldiers and Jacobite soldiers, instead of staying in Ireland, went to Europe and ended up joining armies over there. And Patrick Sarsfield then ended up dying in 1693. Landon and Brian.
And the weekend Irish then at home. They're great names, isn't they? Galloping Hogan. I'm going to make you Galloping.
Unbelievable.
Galloping Colopy now, because I'm going to ask you to jump ahead, to gallop ahead to the pogrom. I mentioned the pogrom. This will surprise an awful lot of people, I think, who may not have heard of it.
This is it, because even I grew up out in about 20 miles south of the city, so it was only my teenage years. Someone said, that's the Jewish graveyard. And I said, Jewish graveyard in Limerick? Complete news to me. But what had happened was, a lot of people will be familiar with Fiddler on the Roof, the music and whatnot. There was a series of pogroms in Russia. So a lot of Jewish communities had actually pushed west. And one group from Akmejan in Lithuania ended up in Limerick. Eventually, there was about 150 families centered around Wolfstone Street. They ended up, a lot of them, getting into money lending. And I think that's where a lot of these problems arose. So in 1904, in March, a priest called John Cray, who was the head of the Arch Confraternity, which was the largest of its kind on the planet, he basically from the pulpit castigated the Jewish community, and he worked up tensions, and this culminated in about 200 people going down, smashing windows, throwing stones, throwing mud, and then a boycott ensued. Now, the Bishop of Limerick and the Church of Ireland Bishop both condemned it, but it had little effect. By October of that year, there was only six families left in Limerick City.
Okay.
And essentially, the community is gone now. But it's important to remember, because sometimes we tend to glorify our kind of victimized moments, but we forget that sometimes we were the ones making these victims.
Yeah, it is important. We don't have time to mention Loch Gur, which is so special archaeologically, but people should look it up, because it is one of the richest areas, not just in Ireland, but in Europe and further afield. Look, we've covered Munchen, Dunmore, Raymond Le Grove, the Vikings, the Normans, the pogroms. You're definitely earning the title of Galloping Brian Colopy, so thank you very much indeed
for that.
That's the history of Limerick in a nutshell.